Good afternoon. I'd like to open up the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. We are going to start off on a long list of bills today with Senate Bill 222. And if it's helpful, I've written down the order in which we're going to proceed. And I'll give that to you as soon as I find my version of the agenda. We'll go through 222, 267, 170, 540, 2099, 2184, 761, 508, 587, and it should be about 10 p.m. tonight.
That's right.
So, Senate Bill 222 was the work that we've been trying to get our hands around on dual credits for a good part of the last year. And we have had work groups, we have had meetings with school superintendents, the governor's office, teachers, and what I've found is that everyone is energized in a very positive way to get more high school students to win college credits in an effort to make college more affordable and their high school careers more productive. And we've looked at all kinds of models, paying school districts per transfer module that they can create for students. We've looked at giving high school students sort of vouchers to buy community college credits. And we just don't have the gears aligning right. It's just not quite there and requires a lot more work, for example, on things of assessments. And studying this, we don't do a terrible job in Oregon. It's just that some of the procedures and protocols that are done at Clatsop Community College are different than those at Chemeketa. And some community colleges like PCC do an excellent job. Others not so good. And there's just no uniform system. So in light of that, I met with our education chief, Dr. Rudy Crewe, last week. He has agreed to be the lead in a study, an implementation study over the next year to look at ways to do some of these things with the technical expertise necessary. And we will also widen the grants to some teachers and schools somewhat. So this will be decided down in Ways and Means. All of this is included in the dash 3 amendments of Senate Bill 222, which replaces the entire bill. Councilor Donovan, if you take us through a quick walkthrough.
Certainly, Chair Haas, members of the committee. As it currently stands, Senate Bill 222 does a number of things. The dash 3 amendments, which the committee is going to consider today, have two main purposes. The first is to establish the Accelerated Learning Committee, and it directs that committee to report to the legislature no later than October 2014 for initiatives and recommendations, including recommended legislation. And it also then mandates the Oregon Education Investment Board design and implement those programs, anything that will be considered by the legislature, and it appropriates funds, which is the second part of the dash 3 amendments, for those investments. Those funds are consistent with the recent governor's and co-chair's budget reports.
Okay, so the amendment essentially replaces the bill. I want to give it time to hang out there for a while. So if the committee would please, I'd like to, if there's no one signed up here to talk about this, and I don't think there is, I'd like to adopt this amendment. And subject to change, of course, and possibly vote on and sending it to Ways and Means as early as next week. So, Senator Cruz.
I'd like to amend the amendment.
Okay.
Just for clarity's sake, because it does have the president appointing two and the speaker appointing two, and it should be noted that they should be one from 1R and 1D, I think is probably what was intended here, but it's not specific.
Okay.
Although we could put that on the record, I suppose.
We could put that on the record. I don't know.
I mean, I'm assuming, Mr. Chair, that's the intent, so.
That is the intent. So let me open, close a public hearing on Senate Bill 222 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 222. Senator Pinal?
Chair Hess, I move to adopt the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 222 dated March 7, 2013.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 222. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes and the dash three amendments are adopted. Okay. Stay tuned. There'll be more to come on this measure and in the coming weeks and in the coming year. All right. Next on the list. Okay, Alethea, do you want to help us with this next bill? Ms. Alethea Miller, our legislative policy intern, will help us with 267 today, and I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 267. Alethea, can you give us a quick summary?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 267 changes the title of President of State Board of Higher Education to Chairperson of Board. This is our second public hearing.
Okay, and we don't have anyone signed up. I'm going to move into a work session. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 267 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 267. You remember the testimony from the OUS system last week that this was part of best practices and
chair
helps avoid confusion. Senator Roblin?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Senator Knope?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 267 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 267 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none. Senate Bill 267 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. It is down to me, so I will carry this bill on the floor of the Oregon State Senate. Thank you, Olivia.
So, Mr. Chair, we're going this way, pretty much. Okay, so
it's a secret magic.
So let's not pass any more bills.
I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 540. We have nobody here signed up to testify. And so I'm going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 540 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 540. We do have an amendment. Councilor Donovan, if you could give us a summary of what the amendment does.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 540 recommends a task force on infrastructure for the state education system. And in response to some concerns raised particularly by the Oregon School Boards Association, some of the language in the dash one amendments for Senate Bill 540 was drafted. It modifies and broadens some of the scope of the infrastructure projects. It's also, this measure contains a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, where they will probably also consider a lot of these issues.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have some questions. For the record, and maybe these are questions that should chase this to Ways and Means, I'm thinking, but okay, we're going to create this database, but how will this be maintained once the $250K has been expended? Would be one question. And I would also suggest, if indeed they're going to do energy efficiency audit, shouldn't they be looking to the Energy Trust for funding, which would, I think, would be an appropriate place to go? And what is going to be the staffing level? And is there already a nonprofit entity in mind to do this? And those are the questions I have on whether they actually chase this down there. But I think the most important one, Mr. Chair, is if indeed we're looking for energy efficiencies in schools, that the Energy Trust should be maybe the first place we look.
Further discussion? Actually, we're not in work session yet, but Senator Roblin?
No, I'm good. It's just a good one. We just have to recognize it has applicability in only certain places. So it isn't the whole state. It's only where the people who put into that actually have service.
Mr. Chairman, I realize that, but if...
But we should always look at them.
If we do that, then the money that might be going could be shifted, so...
I absolutely agree.
All right. Well, let me do this. Let me open up a work session on Senate Bill 540. For purposes of referring it to Ways and Means, and let them grapple with some of those questions you raised, Senator Cruz.
Yep.
Let's adopt the amendment. We'll adopt the amendment and then the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated March 8, 2013 to Senate Bill 540.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Do you want to move this somewhere else?
You want to move it somewhere else?
Chair House, I move Senate Bill 540 as amended to the floor with a D-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 540 to the floor with a D-pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the bill moves to
Senator
the Ways
Cruz
and Means.
Senator Cruz recognized volunteered to carry
it. He rescinded his comments?
No, okay. He volunteered to carry it.
Well, no, actually, that was my turn, so now it passes to Senator Roblin.
There you
so.
Go.
Hour or two. Oh. I'm going to open up a work session only on Senate Bill 170. We had a correspondence from the Senate President. They want this bill back, and so we are just going to bat it back to them without taking any action or discussion or hearing on it. So,
Senate President wants it back?
Yes.
All right. Well, should we ask for something in return?
That's fair.
I mean, I'm sure they're watching this on TV and about ready to come down, so I just...
I think you're racking up points as you speak.
Sweet. In that case, we're in work session. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 170 without recommendation back to Senate President Peter Courtney for referral to another committee.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 170 without recommendation back to the Senate President for referral to another committee. Is there any discussion? Is there any...
Mr. Chair, I'm assuming this might be coming to a committee near me soon.
I think you're right.
I think that's a safe assumption. Further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. Okay. Now we're to 2099. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2099. Councilor Donovan.
Thank you, Chair House, members of the committee. House Bill 2099 changes the term second languages to world languages for purposes of elementary and secondary education requirements. And it declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2013.
Jan McCombs from the Department of Education.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, I am Jan McComb, the Legislative Director for the Oregon Department of Education. I think I can be brief. I'm here to speak in favor of House Bill 2099. House Bill 2099 is a housekeeping bill that changes the term second languages to world languages. Oregon education law uses the term second languages to describe the teaching of a language other than English, French, German, Spanish, and so on. This is a problem for a number of reasons. The first problem is that the term second language is often confused with English as a second language for those students who are learning English for the first time. The second problem is that for students learning more than one language, the new language may not be a second language. It may be a third language or a fourth language. For a student who is deaf or hard of hearing, whose primary language is American Sign Language, their second language might be English. In short, the term second languages is outdated and ambiguous and does not reflect the verbiage used worldwide within the field of language. The Confederation in Oregon for Language Teaching support the bill, as does the Oregon Second Language Content and Assessment Panel. The bill passed out of the House Committee on a unanimous vote and off the House floor with one no vote. Last session, the same bill passed the Senate without a single no vote. That's it. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only concern I have, being a very big Star Wars and Star Trek fan, is that this excludes a lot of other languages. And I'm willing to go there right now, but it's okay. I'm okay. I can.
Chair Hass, Senator Roblin, I'm not sure it would exclude other languages.
Oh, okay.
I just rattled off a few as examples.
All right, we're going to hear from the Klingons.
Okay.
Those would be galactic languages. These are just world languages.
Thank you, Chair Hass. Do we know a cost to the school districts to change, to make this change from second languages to world languages?
Chair Hass, Senator Canope, no. They do not have to do that. We're just changing it in our OARs and in the statute.
And is there any cost to the State Department to do it?
We'll probably do it when we're amending the OARs for something else. I don't think we're going to spend a lot of time on this.
Okay. Thank you. And there is a fiscal report that says it will have minimal cost to the state. We don't have anyone else signed up to testify for or against this. So I'm going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2099, and I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2099. Senator Canope.
I'm assuming this is what we got for Senate Bill 170, so. I didn't know if, what you negotiated. So. Yeah. Chair Hass, I move House Bill 2099 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Canope moves House Bill 2099 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Biden.
Aye.
Senator Cruz.
Maybe he's thinking it over. Senator Cruz.
Am I carrying it?
This is the
not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet. We have to pass it first.
Tuition equity. Yes or no? This is changing from the second language to world language.
Yes.
Okay.
That's all you need.
Oh, I mean.
Yes.
Vice Chair
Snow? Aye.
Chair Hass?
Aye. House Bill 2099 passes to the Oregon, to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. We are to Senator Canope, if you would.
Oh, going that way. I didn't know that.
Carry this bill.
It's all the pressure on.
Of course.
Okay. Okay. We'll move out of our order here because we have some reps from the House coming over to testify in 2184. So we'll move into a series of bills having to do with virtual education. And it's tempting to open these all at the same time, but I just think legislatively it might get us off. So I'll just do them one at a time. And that means I know some of you have traveled here from ways. You might just, if you want to testify in both, just come up twice. So we'll start with Senate Bill 761. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 61. If you want to give us a brief summary and then a comment from Senator Beyer.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Hass, members of the committee. Senate Bill 761 establishes the Task Force on Virtual School Governance for the purpose of recommending governance structures for virtual education that is provided and will be provided statewide. The task force, this provision contains a sunset date for the task force on the convening of the first regular session of 2015 of the Legislative Assembly, and it declares an emergency effective on passage. This measure contains a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Beyer, did you?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, thank you. Colleagues, this issue goes back to lots of changes that the legislature made in the virtual schools program in 2009. And part of that was the looking at how the programs were administered and so forth. For whatever reason, that legislation, and I believe it was in 11, called for creating a virtual schools with membership from both the House and the Senate, as well as public membership appointed by the governor, with a report that was due back to the Assembly in the 2012 meeting. For one reason or another, the governor chose to not appoint the members until literally days before the report was due, so it didn't get done, although that committee of the task force of which I was a member was very well constructed and I think could have done some good work in making recommendations. We got into the 12th session and for, I would say, reasons of politics, that task force did not get extended. I think it needs to be, should be. I think there's some work that needs to be done that doesn't speak to what should come out of that group. It's just that there's some legitimate issues that ought to be looked at, and I believe it makes sense to have a task force.
Okay. Thank you. Well, let's call Heidi Smith up, Steve Isaacs, and I can't read this writing, Annie Hauser.
Yeah, all three.
Okay. I'm going to testify on 508.
Okay.
Chair Hass, committee members, I'm going to pass on this bill.
Okay. That leaves you, Steve.
I guess you're stuck with me.
Start off with your name and go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and committee, my name is Stephen Isaacs. And I'm a parent and a learning coach. My son sitting in the back row back there is in seventh grade. He's with the Oregon Virtual Academy. And I oppose this, or I will say I even question this bill and the idea of having a task force redo what I thought we once did before. Our school currently, I mean, it's functioning. I mean, what I fear is that is a bill that's being put forth that has a determined agenda of looking for a predetermined destination of looking for negative along the way. I see the bill as a sense of being put forth with the intent of just taking away from a virtual school, a charter virtual school, the public charter virtual school. You know, that is working, and it's working for a lot of kids. My son has been a member of the school for 4 years. We tried tirelessly to try and find a school system to put him in that would function for him. We looked at the public schools, we looked at private schools, and nothing seemed to work. And we found something thinking we were doing what was right for our son. I personally wanted to keep him within a public system, which is why I chose the public virtual model. And he has blossomed. He has done great. He even asked me, why is it that people want to take away a school that actually works? And at any time I see something or any talk that I fear that there's something behind it that wants to take away from that school, whether it be funding or restrictions and things like that, I have to wonder about what is the purpose of this to eventually shut this down so that we try and force all these children back into a one model fits all size. And I've been in schools. I have been through schools. And at the same time, when I was struggling with what to do with my son, I have had people within the school system, the public school system, sit there and tell me, remember, this is only a job, and a lot of these kids are going to fall through the cracks. Now, that came from one individual within the school system, but that was pretty appalling to hear that. And that is not where I want to see children, you know, falling through the cracks. That's just not it. That's a reflection on our society, our state, our government, our education system. You know, I know that there are lots of problems within our school, but I just don't understand how we approach it this way, by attacking models that are working, methods that are working for kids, to try and force everything under one roof. I mean, you mentioned previously, you know, Dr. Rudy Crew, he is our chief education officer, and if I may, could I just read a few sentences? So, hope you don't mind my red glasses here, but once we have, this is something that he says in his book, says, once we have school systems with a variety of schools, magnet, charter, local, catchment, specialized, you name it, that offer a variety of classes and activities and services, all with a track record of achievement, and on the other side, parents able to choose from among these educational experiences they consider best for their children, then we'll have a true school choice. Then we'll have a living, breathing school system that is smart and reactive to the institutional and personal needs of its community in a three-dimensional way. What I keep seeing is we keep trying to force everything back under one roof, and instead of thinking about how do we reach all these different kids, we create a task force and we spend taxpayer money to repeat something that we've already once done before. My son deserves the opportunity to have an equal quality education as anybody else in the state, and so does every other child. And I keep seeing that we keep going backwards and we keep trying to hold things backwards instead of trying to move forward to try and find what works for our kids. And everybody knows that everybody learns differently. I'm not against teachers, and I am not against, you know, the public school system. I would, no way am I against it. But I don't understand the mindset that's coming from it in the direction of trying to take away from something that's working. The school hasn't exploded. There hasn't been this rush to go to virtual education. My question to that idea that I've heard passed around for the last couple of years is, if the public school system as is doing so well, then why are they so worried about a virtual, public charter virtual school that is working? A lot of our kids are coming to the school, as with us, my son, you know, because the other system was failing them.
Mr. Isaacs, we're not debating the merits of online education. This is just a task force, and whether it should be continued or not, to look for ways to improve that system or not, and how to better integrate it with the very changing, fast-paced, changing world we live in. So
I understand. Yeah. I understand.
Senator Meyer?
No, I thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anne Marie Gurney and Blake Olson.
I would like to pass on this, Mr. Chairman, and I will testify on 508.
Thank you.
Senator Haas, Chair Haas, Vice Chair Senator Knope. My name is Anne Marie Gurney, and I am a member of the Oregon Connections Academy Parents Association. You have our association's written testimony in front of you. It's coming towards you right now, actually. And we have a basic timeline and our Parents Association thoughts on this issue. I'll keep it very brief. This would be the third time around this block. We were there when Senator Beyer was with that task force. We were there when the task force came out of to the 2009 session. You have the timeline there and the references. As online parents, as people who just want to get their kids educated, we feel that there is the governance for online schools is in place. It's being well watched. We are scrutinized. We are taken care of. We have rules and regulations by which we must follow. We don't need another task force. I have been an online parent of two kids now for 6 years, and this would be my third task force, which means I get to leave my home in Northeast Portland and drive down here, testify, and keep reminding you that this is a great form of education that doesn't need more rules and regulations. And I am open for any questions if you have any.
Any questions? Thank you. Anybody else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 761? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 761, and I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 761. Senator Knope?
Mr. Chair, do we have a fiscal on this, or? Are they just going to do it when they get to Ways and Means, or what are we doing?
Is there a fiscal attached?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Knope, the fiscal statement issued is a fiscal light, so-called, so they're going to prepare a more full fiscal when it arrives at the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay.
What is Ways and Senator Means? Beyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. There's, at least on my part, there was no understanding or consideration that this would affect the schools at all necessarily. It was just when we were talking about it before, there's some administrative issues that were popping up, how to deal with it all that needed to be addressed. And we recognize that. The task force that was impaneled before had members of charter schools on it. I think it was working well. And it was just that we just never got the job done because of the timing issue. I do think there are issues out there in terms of policy that need to be addressed, and that's what this should do.
If I could, looking at the list of things to be considered is also online curricula for public schools, mm-hmm. which we had had conversations about several years ago about having the board or the Department of Ed doing the rigor to make sure that they met standards so that school districts themselves Absolutely. Wouldn't have to go into trying to make those determinations, and we haven't really followed through on that the way we should, and I'm actually very interested in that component of it.
That's the piece, frankly, that I was most interested
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
All right. Senator Cano, need a motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 761 be reported out of committee. We do pass recommendation to the, and the bill be referred to the Joint Ways and Means Committee by prior reference.
Senator Knope moves that Senate Bill 761 be reported out of the committee with the due pass recommendation of the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have not been through the process with virtual schools since when I was in the legislature. That was just a dream of people to have virtual schools. We were talking about school choice. And if they ultimately decide to do this, I would be happy to serve on this task force. So I'm just letting the powers that be know. Maybe that's what we get for Senate Bill 170. I'm not sure. I don't see a lot of harm in looking at, and I think there's things that we can learn, and quite frankly, that that general public school community can learn from both charter schools and virtual charter schools. And so, and I would defend them all day long because I think parents need choices in this process, because not every public offering to date serves the needs of every child. And so I think it's critical that we do the best we can to improve all the products that we have and even expand on that choice. So,
further discussion? Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also believe that having an in-depth look at this is important. People who know my history know in my school district, in my high school when I was principal, we started two charter schools on the same campus. One is an online charter school. It's been going and doing well, mm-hmm. Fairly small, but it serves a purpose, and I agree that having options for kids is very important. I have always felt that the statewide charter schools should be looked at as statewide public schools, public charter schools, and that there should be an opportunity in that sense for some of the resources that are going to investigate how they are dealing with their students, all those other kinds of things. And I think that's a part of the discussion. So I think this is an important bill because we let things expand because it was something new, and individual school districts are doing statewide things. It's created other kinds of problems. I think having real conversations. I don't think it should affect the kids. There should be options for kids, and I would like to make sure that there are. And there's a number of issues, I think, with respect to governance that I think it would be good to have the conversation about. So I think this is a good bill. I look forward to making it move forward.
Okay. Thank you. If there's no further discussion, is there any objection? Seeing none, motion passes, and Senate Bill 761 moves to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 761, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 508. We have a long list. Before we get to that, Councilor Donovan, could you give us a quick summary?
Sure. Chair Hass, members of the committee, thank you. Senate Bill 508 specifies minimum enrollment requirements for public charter schools that offer online courses. It declares an emergency. It is effective on passage. Current state statute requires a minimum enrollment of 25 students for public charter schools and does not account for students taking advantage of online course offerings for a public charter school.
Lori Weber.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer, representing 42,000 members of the Oregon Education Association. Feels a little like Old Home Week discussing online education yet again. We are here as requesters of Senate Bill 508, and by we I mean actually the Oregon Virtual Education Program. Thanks to the co-sponsorship of Senators Cruz and Roblin for this bill. It's really a little housekeeping measure, a modest proposal, if you will, sponsored by 19 legislators in the House and Senate, a bipartisan bill that would enable hybrid online programs to operate without requiring a 25-student full-time enrollment minimum and replacing it instead with a 250-student who are part-time enrollment minimum from six school districts plus a 1% full-time enrollment minimum. The idea is that as all of this world has been evolving, online programs aren't just full-time charter schools anymore, comprehensively designed. Back in 1999, when the charter school law passed in Oregon, we were talking about brick-and-mortar schools almost exclusively, and I think perhaps exclusively at that point. And the 25-student threshold was designed to ensure that these schools, when they opened, would be financially stable. Hybrid programs are very new as an animal in the public education system, and they don't typically serve full-time students. They may, they can, they opt to often. The one that I'm the secretary on the board for does. But it is not the primary mission of a hybrid online program to offer comprehensive education, but rather course-at-a-time online learning. And most of the students at ORVED are, in fact, in residence of their home district, and then they take a course at a time, Mandarin Chinese, credit recovery, health class, what have you, while still maintaining their residence at their home district. And so we just wanted to update Oregon's charter school law to ensure that this kind of mission has a different kind of threshold that makes more sense with respect to the kind of students that are served in the way they're served. And that's all this bill does, is it says instead of a 25-student full-time minimum, you go to a 250 part-time student minimum plus those other features. And that's it. Be happy to take your questions.
Senator Roblin, I neglected in offering you and Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you. I'll ask some questions and answer that I already know pretty much the answer for. There are a number of people I think in the audience that were concerned that this new requirement would be an and instead of an or, so that if I already had a school and I didn't provide this, I would no longer be able to be a charter school. But this doesn't affect a regular online charter school that had 25 students. They meet the requirement. Right. Is that correct?
Chair Haas and Senator Roblin, that's correct. There's nothing in the bill that does that.
Okay. And you picked 250, which is a little bit larger than I would have expected, in the sense that 25 online schools with a 7-period day would be 175 courses. And so at 250, you've really exceeded that by another 75 individual courses, along with at least the one student, or in the case of Orwood, has about 300, three students that had to be full-time students. Is that also correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
And our superintendent of Northwest Regional ESD, who is, in effect, the founder of ORVED, is on his way down here. He apologizes for being late, but I'm hopeful that if he does arrive before his opportunity is passed, that he would also probably like to say a few words.
And I hope we can clarify and make sure that people, because I've talked to a number of those people, to explain to them that this has no intention of changing what the previous requirement was. It's only giving one more avenue for a particular school to become an online charter school.
Critical point.
Mr. Chair and Senator Roble, that's right. And I can't imagine. We didn't contemplate having any impact whatsoever on any other program.
Senator Knope.
So is that clear in the language, though?
I felt it was. I read it a couple times because people asked me, and I thought it was because the and is only in the portion that this and this, 250 plus 1%, that and does go together. And the rest of it, it's all or constant statements. So from my mathematical background with and or, it, to me, indicates that the others are any one of these, but if you pick the 250 part-time, you have an and, at least 1% of your students have to be full-time. So that's how I read it, and I didn't see there a conflict, and I tried, hopefully some other people can explain to me why they felt there was a conflict, because I know that was the intent, and I just want to make sure that it was clear here that and I want to make sure that the language, if you can find the language where you think that isn't clear, I would love to make sure we correct that, because I knew that we had no intent in trying to change the requirements.
So, Lori, on Senate Bill 508, do you see any impact on existing virtual schools that are there today?
Chair Hassan, Vice Chair, no. We absolutely had no intent, and my reading of the language is that there is no impact whatsoever.
I agree.
Mr. Chair, that's my read as well.
Thank you.
And also, to back up Senator Roblin, I would say if indeed it can be proven to us that our language doesn't do what we think it does,
we'd be glad
to amend it, but I think the language does.
All right. Well, let's hear it from some people.
So other people may have had a different idea. We'd love to hear their comments so that we know. Yeah.
We've got a number of people signed up. Stephen Isaacs, Heidi Smith, and Steve Buckstein. Why don't you come up? And usual rules apply. If you've got written testimony, you don't need to read it into the record. We'll have it. You highlight.
I'm Stephen Isaacs, and I'm going to pass on this one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Heidi Smith, and I drove here from Prineville, Oregon, with half of my four sons. Two of them are doing ORVA for their second year, and I just want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for listening to us today, and it's an honor to be here in Salem. And I am concerned, and I want to oppose SB 508. That's why I'm here, because I am concerned about the language, and I just would be devastated if our freedoms were taken away. And I want to begin by saying how much I appreciate the American value, freedom to choose, which has defined great Americans who have fought and died so that we can live in freedom in our state of Oregon and my small town of Crook County. We are parents who care about our children and their education, and we have chosen a sound program with state-certified instructors. And we love ORVA because the teachers are involved and accessible in a way that makes the system work well. And I see SB 508 as nothing but restricting our access, especially in Prineville, to a better education alternative for my children in a small town that does not have many options. Please don't limit our family's ability to try to educate our children in a way that works the best for us. How can it be in the best interest of Oregon kids? Let us not forget what the end goal really is. It is to educate our children so that they can become contributing members in our communities. If virtual academies can help parents reach that goal, then why would you want to make it more difficult for the parents by restricting enrollments? My fifth grade son just finished Johnny Tremaine for his literature novel in ORVA. And as Esther Forbes told us in this timeless classic, the price of revolution was so that a man can stand up. So let us be able to choose in Oregon how we think is best to educate our own kids, and don't limit our opportunities for greatness in Prineville. And don't allow our inheritance to be stolen by taking away our freedom to choose this great education. So if you can make sure that those words are really what she said, that would be great. That's why I'm here, just to make sure that those words really mean.
Senator Roblin?
So where is it that you think that it might be different in the bill? Do you have any idea what words it are that changes that?
When it says about the 250 students.
Okay. And
then I Senator Roblin?
Because I want to make sure that I read it for the record as well as anything else, why I think it's the same. So originally it just said, the Oregon public charter school shall maintain an active enrollment of at least 25 students. So they wanted to put some other addendum. So they took that part out and then made it the first statement of the following. A public charter school shall maintain an active enrollment of at least 25 full-time students. At least 25 students who receive educational services under the cooperative agreement described in ORS, which is another way of doing the same thing. If the public charter school provides online courses, separate, at least 250 students who are enrolled in public charter school on a basis that is less than full-time and who are present, represent at least six different school districts in which the school doesn't reside. So this is a totally different way to make a new charter school. They also have to, and at least 1% of those must be full-time students. In ORVA or any of those others, you meet both of them, basically, because they're taking a lot more than 250 courses, and they're more than 25 full-time students. So there's no way I could see how it could affect any other school. And if other people can show me where it would, I'd love to find that out. So We are on the same page. We don't want to affect you, but we'll hear, see if everybody else has a different take on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Buckstein?
Chair Haas, ask members of the committee. I'm Steve Buckstein, senior policy analyst and founder of Cascade Policy Institute, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank based in Portland. I also oppose 508, not because it necessarily will limit freedom of existing schools, but for the unintended consequences. I sat here, didn't testify on the task force bill, the previous one, but you've agreed that you want to do again what's already been done, set up a task force to try and quote-unquote improve or set governance for online education, and now you're here trying to do it yourselves. Maybe you should wait for the task force, because and I don't want the task force. I'll be clear on that. But I think that these kind of rules, I mean, Senator Roblin, you said 250 may be too high from what you were expecting. Maybe it should be 232. Maybe it should be 158. There is no right answer. We're in an innovative world now, and Senator Haas, as you pointed out earlier, things are changing rapidly. As Senator Knope pointed out when he was last in the legislature, there were no online schools of any kind. Technology is changing our world very quickly, and in a free market system, that technology improves our lives generally. The area in our lives that changes the slowest, with all due respect, is government. Is when government sets up and runs the system, it changes very slowly. You're trying to keep up, but everything moves basically in this building slower than the technology. And so until there's some definite problem where somebody's being exploited or somebody is being harmed, I would say allow new opportunities. This bill may not affect any of the current online charter schools, but what about the next one that wants to start and do something different? So that's my take.
Roblin?
So currently, Orbit with 300 and some students cannot be a charter school because it doesn't meet the 25 full-time student requirement. All this does is extend the number of charter schools. So what you'd say is we should limit them now and require and not do this. We should limit the expansion of charter schools. And I just want to make sure that I got that correct.
Chair Haas, Senator Roblin, that's a good point. One of the unintended consequences. You should then eliminate the 25 minimum. I mean, instead of creating more requirements, why not eliminate the ones you have?
Questions? Further questions? All right. Thank you. Blake Olson.
I'm Mr. Chairman Haas and fellow senators of the committee. Thank you for having me here to testify. I drove down from Beaverton, Oregon, and maybe it was the language in the bill because I was hung up on the 250 as well. I actually oppose any legislation.
Start off with your name, Blake.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Blake Olson, Olson, Beaverton, Oregon. And I oppose any legislation that limits student access or impedes the growth of virtual schools and limits the ability for alternative forms of education. And this is through my own experience. I was living over in Japan for the last 10 years working as an international consultant, and I had my children sitting back there were American citizens born abroad. They were in the K-12 school system in Japan. The earthquake happened, as you're all aware of, and the Fukushima nuclear incident, and so we relocated back to the United States. And we found in traditional education, my daughter was speaking and writing Japanese, but also could only speak English and couldn't read or write English. We went into the school system, and the brick-and-mortar system didn't work for her. And yet my other daughter, who is currently in the traditional brick-and-mortar system, is doing fine because she was younger. And so we sought out ORBA. We're utilizing the program, and it's a wonderful program, and it is working wonderful for us. So my oldest daughter is in ORBA, online schooling, and my youngest is in traditional elementary school. And so that's what I'm here to testify today for.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, I guess my question is, As you read this, do you see it as having an effect other than to extend an opportunity for a new charter school to get started, which will give more kids across the state the opportunity to select an individual course or two as opposed to taking their whole schooling through it? I see that as this charter school wants to do that for students across the state. I don't see it as limiting anything that you're already doing.
Like was testified earlier by some of the other participants, maybe it is the language. I saw it as an attempt to limit access to virtual schools. It seems like for the last couple of years, as I've been doing research, there's been some opposition and some lobbying going on by particular interest that probably don't see the virtual school system in their best interest. And taking that all into account, I would oppose anything that would have a potential negative impact currently or in the future on the virtual school system, because it has really helped our family immensely in our situation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the U.S.
Thank you, sir.
Ken Woody.
Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Ken Woody. I'm director of the West Lane Technical Learning Center at Charter High School in Elmira, Oregon. We're in a consortium with the Gresham Barlow Webb Academy and also the Clackamas Webb Academy, and I'm representing them as well. We are an online school, as they are. We are not a virtual school because we have a classroom where students come in on a regular basis. We also have a technical program of auto and electric vehicle, a program which we serve students from 14 different school districts, mostly in Lane County. We have about 100 students. I spoke with Senator Roblin before this, and I agree. As you read what I have, it's against our interpretation of what that bill was. And my interpretation was the same as the director's at the other two places. What we read is that our enrollment had to now be limited to this number and in this fashion, less than full time. We did not read it. And so in answer, Senator Roblin, to your question, this is how we read it. If you look at line 14, it says a public charter school shall maintain an active enrollment as follows. And then you go A, B, and C. And then if the public charter school provides online courses, we felt that that was now going to apply to us. We didn't see that as an exception to that. I will say, this is why this happens. We are constantly dodging the spotlight of the virtual school. We understand there are special interest groups and so on that are in conflict with them. Our friends at the State Board of Education are very high on our school and call us a hybrid program. To be honest with you, I don't see a real definition of what a hybrid program is anyway, other than we can say, hey, this is what the State Board of Education said when we went up before them on a waiver situation a couple years ago. So our opposition is to how this is written. If, in fact, it's to expand the options of part-time students through another realm, that's great with us. But we did not read it that way at all.
Well, it's looking like they're, just for sake of clarification, that we do need an amendment. If the intent is the same. And
I don't know that we need an amendment. I just think that we need to make sure the interpretation is clear and that we have the right answer to this.
Well, the one gentleman who said, why not just make an exception to the 25 student rule, to me that makes the most amount of sense and is the least confusing. So I'll leave that up to you.
Thanks. Questions? Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Annie Hauser?
Chair Haas, other committee members, my name is Anae Hausner, and I am currently Board of Director Treasury for Oregon Virtual Academy. And after listening to the testimony, I do see that
it can be read either way. There is a problem with the language when it comes to understanding it for the normal person. We are not a hybrid. We offer online, full-time online courses, and I understand that there's other schools that offer part-time. As far as that, all I'm asking and all I'm opposing on is the language. I just like to have it or an amendment brought in or clarification of what is hybrid and what isn't hybrid.
The other kind still exists, right?
That's it.
Okay.
Any questions? No.
Questions? Thank you. Preston Baxter.
It says IND.
Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Preston Baxter. I'm also with the Connections Academy Parents Association. I just had one minor issue. We're talking about the language, and I would suggest that it seems to be line 16 that is causing much of the confusion. And in my estimation, if you added the word or at the end of line 16, it would very clearly spell out each of them are separate. There's three distinct methods for staffing your or for enrolling your students.
Got it.
In my mind, that's the one that is missing. So that would just be my suggestion. You were asking for clarification.
So, Senator Robin?
Yeah, so what you're saying is they wouldn't have to have any full-time students to be a charter school.
No, at least 25 full-time students would be one of the options.
Right.
Or another option would be to be part of a cooperative. Or the third option then would be the 250 minimum part-time, which I think is what we're hearing was the intent, was that there would be at least three different options.
But
Senator Robin?
What I don't understand is, large A and large B go together. They are one kind of school.
Yes, I agree.
So what other school is not included in the first two?
What I'm getting at is I think there's confusion as to whether there is an or, whether there's three distinct methods. And I think small A on line 16, I think, is where the confusion is. If there was an or at the end of that line, it would clarify that there are, in fact, three different ways.
I see what you're saying. Instead of the...
Because there is at the end of line 18 already.
Instead of the punctuation.
Correct.
That could
be. It would be similar to line 18, and it would clarify that there are three distinct options.
I
all right, so maybe there's amendment.
We'll check with LC and check with that, because I agree. I think from my perspective, the asterisk means the same as that. So I think, and we'll check with LC, but if that clarifies, I think we'll check with LC and find out. Thank you for that.
Thank you for your testimony.
I really do appreciate that.
Senator Cano.
Chair Haas, can we have Lori Wimmer come back for some cross-examination?
Certainly, if she agrees to it.
Gotcha.
So, Lori, my question is where did we come up with the 250 students? Why not 135 or 200 or 50?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, this was put together by the ORVED administration as what they thought would be commonsensical in terms of what it takes to be financially viable in terms of the reimbursement rate on a hybrid basis, which is a fee-based rather than an ADM-based. And so it was done according to money. I didn't pick it. But so I hope that answers your question. He's on his way down here. I'm hoping that he'll be here soon.
He looks like he's here.
Ah, good.
Oh, he doesn't know anything.
Jim?
And also, for your record, I just wanted to point out that we've also asked Hannah Live, as the drafter of this, to come down so that she can explain to you the structure of why she does element of the set A, element of the set B, or element of the set C.
Before we get too far into that, we definitely will do some sort of a clarifying amendment in order to proceed. And Jim, I know you just wrote down here, we spent the last hour on this bill because of a interpretation issue, so if you had any brief comments as we finish up, that'd be great.
Chair Haas,
so somebody get him some oxygen.
The committee, thank you for giving me this opportunity. And I don't have much of a voice. I've been fighting a cold. So I just want to clarify that.
Start off with your ID, Jim.
I'm sorry. For the record, James Sager, Superintendent, Northwest Regional ESD, and I guess part of the creator of this delivery model. What I want to point out was the whole purpose of moving into charter schools was to provide expanded opportunities and experiences, thank you, for for students. And what we've discovered is that there are a large number of students in this state who don't fit neatly into full-time virtual or full-time brick and mortar. What we've created is a blended program where we have cooperative agreements with each of our districts. And so we share jointly the responsibility for the student, and we share the resources of that student. This bill would allow us as a charter to make sure we're not having to make sure that on any given day we have 25 full-time students on this day, because they fluctuate back and forth. One grading period they may be full-time with us. Another grading period they're taking a single class with us and the rest of their classes at their home school. So it is a new environment, and we've identified that environment. We've created a structure that will help meet the needs of those students, and this would help make sure that this operation can continue to move forward and we can continue that expansion. So thank you.
Okay. Senator Knope.
So, Jim, my question was to Lori, which she said you would know the answer to. Why at least 250 students? Because you guys are one of the biggest ESDs.
Yes.
And, you know, draw from many districts. So I just want to make sure that this is available, you know, statewide, and that it's going to work for everybody, not just, you know, not just one EST. So why 250? Why not 125? Why not 75? Why not 175?
Chair Hass, Senator Knope, good to see you. It's not a magic number. It will be my answer to you. We draw from students all over the state. We have 44 agreements already with districts all over the state. So it's not just from our ESD region, and every day we're adding. So we range from Portland to the smallest district in the state. So this really is a statewide collaborative. If there are programs that provide this kind of blended opportunity for students, and that number should be 200, you know, I'm not opposed to looking at that option. What we were trying to do was make sure that it was large enough that it had the stability and the structure that was needed to make sure we provided that good cooperative relationship with the districts, and yet not so big that it was an unreasonable expectation.
Is Bender Redmond in your cooperative?
They both have their own online program, so they haven't joined the cooperative.
Senator Roblin.
So, and I want to make sure that people recognize the difference between your ESD and this.
Correct.
Because this
Thank
is
you.
A separate charter school.
Correct.
Within. Okay. So.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll let you explain
Senator
that.
Senator Roblin, thank you for that. Yes. You know, we've been kind of the driver behind putting it together, but we have a separate board. It's a separate charter. We have two chartering districts, and so it is an entity unto itself. We're just there to help provide its structure.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we're good. So, Jim, we're basically the number you're kind of trying to get to the appropriate economies of scale here is what we're saying. And maybe that needs a little more exploring to find out that may be appropriate for you. But like Senator Knope said, you know, if somebody else wanted to do this, could they make a go of it at 200 or some other number? So.
Senator Cruz, that's exactly.
As we start this new venture, I feel we could be. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, right. Just.
Our intent, Senator, was not to have this be to put anyone else out of business. It's to look at what this expanded, the creativity and the innovation that has come about because of this kind of thinking. We've discovered this is a niche of students that we desperately need to provide service to.
Thank you for coming down.
Thank you.
I'm going to close public hearing on.
Can we bring Hannah up and have her?
No, we're going to do that.
You can go back.
She's fine. I will close our public hearing on this bill, 587-508. And I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2184. Representative Gelser is here. If she could come up and, Councilor, if you could give us a summary.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Hass, members of the committee.
House Bill 2184, this is the version A engrossed. The measure establishes retroactivity provision for the Oregon revised statutes. A number of statutes 31, 33, 9.374.375, and it clarifies that laws requiring all substantiated abuse claims shall be disclosed to the employer. It prohibits entering into an agreement that limits disclosure on abuse claims. Actually, you know, let me not speak legalese. This comes from a court decision out of Josephine County about whether or not a retroactivity clause statute applied to to sexual conduct or alleged sexual conduct in the workplace.
All right. Representative Gelser, thank you for being here today. If you could give us the whys and wherefores, the problem that we're fixing here, and also briefly if you could speak to the amendment that's been offered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Gelser, state representative from Corvallis and Philomath, which is House District 16. House Bill 2184 is your real classic housekeeping fix, a very critically important housekeeping fix. You may remember that in 2009, we worked through a very difficult issue related to how we handle sexual conduct that may occur at school. And we define sexual conduct as a body of behavior that's different than sexual abuse. This is really that grooming type of behavior that may lead up to sexual abuse. Because you're talking about what kind of makes you feel creepy rather than an action, we also worked very closely with all of our education stakeholders to make sure that there was appropriate due process for individuals who found themselves accused of this type of behavior. And we wanted to make sure that while we were notifying future employers that an individual had been terminated or had had a substantiated allegation of sexual conduct in that school, that we were very certain that had gone through an appropriate process, because this could end someone's career. And what we ended up with was House Bill 2184. The court issue that happened this past summer was there was a school district that attempted to act on some of the language that was in this bill, and it was appealed, and the concern was that we did not have a retroactivity clause in the bill. And all this bill does is it clarifies that if you're a school employee, you should not have sexual conduct with students, regardless of whether that was before or after July 1st of 2010. If it was June 1st of 2010, still bad. And that's really all that this bill does. It's very important that we pass this bill in order to give our school districts the tools that they need to have the safest possible workforce. I understand that there is a set of amendments that has been brought forward. I just heard about them yesterday afternoon. My understanding of what the amendments are intended to do are to exempt private schools from the due process requirements that are in the bill. It's my understanding that, in particular, Catholic schools feel like they have better or safer ways of dealing with sexual abuse than what we have proposed for public schools. I'm concerned about putting this amendment in so quickly when we haven't had the opportunity to fully vet and consider it, given that we took more than 2 years to develop the base statute that is in this legislation, that it was such a complicated negotiation with so many attorneys and different kinds of stakeholders. I would hate for us to have to come back 2 years from now, have another housekeeping change because we inadvertently had, in trying to get around the due process, exempted someone from needing to disclose that sexual conduct to a future employer. So my suggestion would be either to hold the bill over to Thursday for working so that we have some time to further investigate the amendment, or to pass this bill as it is so it doesn't have to go back through the concurrence process on the other side, and we can give this certainty to districts that they've asked for, and use a placeholder bill that has an appropriate relating to clause to give this other concept the attention that it needs in its own bill vehicle. And I would be happy to work with you whichever way the committee decides to go today. I would urge you not to adopt this amendment and move the bill today, just so that we can have a little bit more time to get into the whatnots and wherefores of the proposed language. Yeah.
Well, we were not planning on a vote today here, so. Roger, did you want to bring your team up? Roger Martin and Representative, thank you for your thoughtfulness on this. Did you want to stay?
I'm happy to stay in case okay. There's any questions that come up. I need to take off in a minute. But.
Okay, understand.
being one.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I represent the Oregon Catholic Conference, and with me is Tom Dulcich, an attorney in Portland and the lawyer for the church on issues like this. First of all, I want to back up what Representative Gelser just said. We don't want in any way to interfere or to endanger the bill she's trying to pass. We're here because inadvertently we didn't find out that the bill was passing as quick as it did in the House. We would have done all of this or tried to do this in the House. The bill was already out of committee before we had the idea. I did not know about it. The woman on the staff at the Oregon Diocese saw this and said, you know, we've got this ongoing problem. Now, let me just for a moment back off and point out to you, I don't have to tell any of you that the poster child for sexual abuse has been the Catholic Church over the last 15 years. And because of that, we have adopted policies that are the strictest anywhere that I know of. And children going to, and we have 14,000 plus children going to Catholic schools in the state of Oregon, are safer than any other children because we have no degree of tolerance. We have every single teacher, parent, coach. I can't go into my children's grade school without understanding exactly what the policy is, and if you're a coach or something, you got to sign it. Our policies have been developed independent of our own selves. We've gone outside to the leading authority in the state of Oregon, in the United States, to protect children. We're very proud of that record. There is no problem going on currently. Now, we have established the record for teachers that you know when you go to work for us, there is no degree of tolerance. And if we find pornography on your computer, you're history. We don't want an appeals process, you're gone. Just so you understand, that's the reason we've come, because we would just as we don't want to have to be put in a position to go through a series of appeals or so forth. Now, I've talked more than I should because the man sitting next to me is the expert and I'm just the lobbyist. So, Tom, please add something to this. But again, if you and Representative Gelser would rather not do it, we will abide by that. Our problem is simply the relating clause, and I don't know this relating clause. It relates to misconduct of school employees, if there is a House bill still that we could use for our purpose.
Okay. Mr. Dulcich.
Thank you. Thomas Dulcich. I live in Southeast Portland, and although it's not relevant to why we're here, my father was a lifetime public educator, starting in Toledo, ending in Astoria. My mother is a lifetime speech pathologist, starting in the Lincoln County Schools and ending in the Clatsop County ESD. My wife is a veteran Portland Public School teacher. The amendment offered, though, applies only to private schools. And what leads us to this is that it became apparent to people who work in private schools, at least some people that I work with, last spring, that the, I think for lack of a better term, the due process requirements in ORS 339 that fit very well with the public school environment and the rules that govern how districts can deal with public school employees, particularly teachers, put some, this is a colloquialism, handcuffs on private school administrators. There's a requirement in current law for a, quote, investigation, and to put someone on administrative leave, that those are requirements that private school employers do not have. And the concern was that there was some process, while perfectly appropriate to public schools, might either slow down or burden private schools in dealing with a situation like this and employees that may fall within the definitions of this law, which of course is a good one. That's the only reason.
You're essentially saying, and I don't mean this in a negative way, that you don't want to do the due process part under your very strict guidelines.
Correct. Yeah. Well, we would not want to be burdened with those. For instance, hypothetically, here's a hypothetical. A high school teacher who is showing high school students photographs on his cell phone or smartphone that we believe would not be appropriate. Depending on how that might be treated, there might have to be an investigation under the current law. That person could be placed on administrative leave or not. And if that circumstance fell into the statute under current law without the amendment we proposed, we possibly might not be able to terminate that employee immediately, which under private school rules could happen. We just don't believe that we should be, and handcuffed is the wrong word, but limited in that way. That's all. That's the only reason that the amendment is being offered.
Okay. Questions?
This is confusing, Mr. Chair. So basically, what you want to be excluded so that you won't do due process, which is basically as defined in this legislation. Or am I missing something here?
Well, I've got some. Okay,
let me put it this way. Okay, you supposedly this teacher with his smartphone,
right?
And you just say you're fired. Does he have any remedy at that point?
It depends under the contract he has with the school. If he's an employee at will. Maybe or maybe not. If he claims, well, you didn't terminate me because of that, you terminated me because of my age or my ethnicity or my religious background or any of the other suspect categories that all employers have to deal with, he may have remedies. But he doesn't have the same kind of remedies that a public school teacher, like my wife has in the Portland Public Schools, that my parents had as public school educators. He or she doesn't. But that's just, they're different systems in terms of the what's required for disciplining or terminating employees. The public system and the private system legally are much different.
So, if I could, Ms. Chair, so what you're saying, because all we're dealing with current law here.
Correct.
And just changing the timeline. And
right.
And so you're saying that right now, this guy with the cell phone, you can't fire him because of what's in the law.
Well, he could say, wait a sec, I fall within existing ORS Chapter 339, 388. And no, you can't terminate me. You've got to either put me, one, on a paid administrative leave, or you have to wait until the DHS conducts its investigation. And that's just something we'd like to avoid.
Further questions, Senator Roman?
Nothing, but I'd love to ask a question of Representative Gelser.
Sure. Representative Gelser, can you come back up to the dais?
And so we aren't changing the law. So do you interpret it the same way, that they can't do what they've been trying to do and that they would have to do the process with respect to the law we currently have in place and as an extension this one?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I will answer the question the best that I can,
all
having
I can ask.
Read it since Sure. yesterday afternoon. I think I read it a little bit differently. I think what the law talks about is not the ability to terminate someone. It talks about the steps that you need to follow to protect yourself as an employer when you disclose that information to a future employer. I think the intent behind those procedural safeguards is that if you are applying to work in an educational institution in Oregon, that employer needs to check with your prior three educational employers to see if you have a record of sexual misconduct. We wanted to be sure that that record of sexual misconduct was accurate. So, for instance, if I'm a principal in a private school and I get a phone call from a parent that says, Mr. Green made inappropriate comments to my daughter about the way that her sweater fit today, that it would take more than that for that principal then to report to every person that ever called them for a reference that had happened. We would want that principal to actually go through that process to determine whether there was merit to that accusation that had been made. That said, I don't think that the bill itself speaks to hiring and firing practices. I believe that due process has to do with how you document the veracity of that complaint, because we are relying on the veracity of that complaint or the credibility of that concern if that is going to follow that individual to every single job that they go to apply to afterwards. I think that the other clarification that I would like to make, the bill does make reference to the Department of Human Services, but it wouldn't always be the Department of Human Services that does that investigation. In fact, DHS generally doesn't do abuse investigations at school. DHS investigates family abuse. It would tend to be law enforcement or an investigation that would be within that educational entity's process, so that there would be a school might have a process like they would for any other when there is an allegation of misconduct against an employee. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, I think we understand the two situations here. Why don't we just confer and let this breathe for a couple of days and take a course of action.
Thank you,
Representative Gelser. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2184, and in the remaining minutes, I want to make sure that we hear from some people who have signed up to testify on Senate Bill 587. So I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 587 on what has become Virtual Schools Day. Councillor Donovan.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. Senate Bill 587 removes current prohibition on virtual public charter schools related to employment of persons employed by a for-profit entity. It declares an emergency effective on passage, and there's a -1 amendment proposed that further refines the original bill, that also removes the prohibition but indicates methods by which the governing body of a virtual public charter school and the executive of the for-profit entity may actually classify persons seeking employment under that statute. So it's a little bit technical, but it defines who and how can be employed by a virtual charter, public charter school if the for-profit restriction were removed.
Thank you. And Senator Roblin, you're the sponsor, and I believe you drafted the amendment. Could you speak?
Well, I asked for the amendment to be drafted, and I appreciate it. We could bring some of those other people up if you want while I go through that.
Anay Hauser, Marshall Koba, and Steve Buckstein. Why don't you all come up?
So when we passed the bill, I guess it was the previous session, one of the things we did is that we basically said you couldn't have any employees of the for-profit organization that's providing the materials for the charter schools. And I came shortly after that, was talking to one of the people who I've known really well, who's sitting out here in the audience and is a good friend, who was working for the nonprofit, in a sense, checking, and he went around the whole state. In fact, I've been thankful that he was doing that from my own personal experience to understand more about charter schools, because he went and visited families in their homes wherever they were around the state at the expense of the for-profit entity, in large part to make sure that the kids were doing what they're supposed to, that they had what they needed to have, and made sure that the program was working the way it was supposed to be working, even though that had been sold over here to the other K-12. I felt that was a really valuable thing, because if something's being used inappropriately, that's not a good thing. It's nice to have some checks and balances. I still believed strongly when I saw the bill at first, the reason we have the amendments, I was concerned. I didn't want the for-profits hiring the teachers and doing that. I think that's part of the charter deal. But having a few administrators or classified people that can do some other work made sense to me, not the teachers. And so the clarified in the amendment is to make sure that we're not talking about the teachers, we're not talking about the people. Those are still hired by the school in the locality. But apart from that, these other organizations should have the ability to take and make sure that things are being done in appropriate ways with their particular expectations for the kids and so on and so forth, and to follow up. That's where the intent
is. So we're talking about administrators?
And it may be a classified person that can do record keeping, that kind of stuff, to make sure that other kind of stuff is being followed through, but not teachers, not the people providing the education. That's what I think the amendments and all that do. So we'll find out.
Okay, Marshall, did you want to lead off?
Certainly. Good afternoon, Chair Haas and members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba, here today representing the Oregon Virtual Academy, ORVA, which is a virtual public charter school chartered with the North Bend School District and K-12 Incorporated, which is the curriculum and management company that they have chosen to partner with. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 587, and we have prepared Dash 1 amendments for that. ORVA currently educates 1,728 students in our school statewide, and they are enrolled K through 12. The prohibition on for-profit companies employing any employee that works for the virtual public charter school came from amendments to Senate Bill 767 in 2009, and this prohibition has not yet impacted our school because it does not take effect until the end of our current charter, which takes effect this year, June 30 of 2013. So we are hopeful that by passing this bill that that will not be something that we need to work through. Proponents of the prohibition back in 2009, as best as I understand it, told me that they were concerned about the charter school board of the virtual public charter school having a conflict of interest, and that the current management company would have an unfair advantage, and there would be a strong bias towards the continuation of the current contract, and that it was not good for competition. Basically, if they were working with K-12 and there was a new company that came along, they wouldn't be taking a look at that because of the employment and the relationship, the close relationship between the board and the employee. While we're not in agreement with these concerns or that they require such a strong prohibition, we think the concerns are well addressed in the Dash 1 amendments. And I'd just like to touch on the overall intent and goals of charter school legislation in ORS 338.015, which talks about responsible risks to create new, innovative, and more flexible ways of educating children with the public school system. It talks about the provisions of this chapter should be interpreted liberally to support the goals of this section. But then soon after that, in that same section of charter school law, we have this prohibition on employment. So as we look at the inherent conflict in these two sections, go and do good things, but don't hire these certain people. We overlay the innovation of online learning and the great opportunity that it presents students in every district. We have that conflict. So to help reach the promise of virtual public charter schools, it is important that we remember the intent of the charter school law, responsible risks interpreted liberally in the new innovative world of online learning means that there are needs for special, unique, and highly trained individuals to lead and manage these schools. These key personnel need specific skill sets, and a management company, in our case K-12, also needs the ability to share key internal company information, goals, best practices, and other usual and customary company information. The current system is working well. It's supported. These amendments are supported by the North Bend School District and our charter board. So we offer the Dash 1 amendments to reach what we believe is the sweet spot of charter school innovation and flexibility with the oversight and active approval of the sponsoring district. And I think they actually go beyond what Senator Roblin was talking about. So the Dash 1 amendments will meet the concerns of those who support the employment prohibition and remove the perception of bias or favoritism towards the current management company. So to get to the amendments, the Dash 1 amendments maintain the prohibition on who can be employed by the virtual public charter school unless two steps are met. So currently, the decision is made by the charter school board, and we're willing to add a second step to that. So the charter school board would make their decision, let's just use K-12 for example, and would continue the contract on the management with K-12, but also, and in addition to, the executive officer, usually the superintendent of the school district, in our case the North Bend School District, of the sponsoring district must also approve of any employee that is employed by the management company. This is a new provision to charter school law and expands the sponsoring district's oversight of the virtual public charter school and allows the district an active role in the selection of key personnel for the virtual public charter school. So the decisions can be made jointly by the charter school board on the executive officer or can be made on a case-by-case basis. This does not apply to teachers, as Senator Roblin mentioned. They are employees of the charter school today and will continue to be into the future. So, Chair Haas and members, we urge your support of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 587. We think this is a fair and compromise and will enable the Oregon Virtual Academy to continue to offer innovation, excellent curriculum, excellent school management, and continue our leadership role in working to innovate for the betterment of student achievement and student outcomes. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Questions or comments, Marshall Coleman? Okay. Annette?
Anne Hausner, Board of Directors, Oregon Virtual Academy. I wanted to let you know I've been on the board for 3 years, and not one time has our management team from K-12 influenced my decision-making. If anything, it's enhanced it. It's given me the wealth of information that I need and that I require to make my decisions correctly. They've always been there to answer my questions. They're very key in what the kids need, and the administration needs, the board needs. So I like the fact that we're able to do that. I will let you know our board is in the middle of looking at all contracts, including K-12. We do this on a biannual basis just to make sure that our curriculum matches our kids' needs. So whatever that comes up, I do agree with the compromise. I'd rather have the compromise than have nothing ability at all. I don't want to be a board member and have to be responsible for employing the management team, especially since all of us are spread out throughout the state. The other thing is I think that having a management team that's correspond with the company that we decide to have the curriculum with is a good key set for us as an organization moving forward.
Thank you. Steve?
Thank you. Chair Haas, members of the committee, again, Steve Buckstein with Cascade Policy Institute in Portland. I generally like this bill. I probably like it better without amendments because it simply eliminates a restriction, but understand the process doesn't always work that way. But I did want to sort of put a broader context on this, if that's all right. As I understand it, the reason that the prohibition on anybody being hired by for-profit companies in these schools was an aversion to the profit motive itself. No public schools are for-profit in the state, and I think that's a mistake. I think the profit motive is actually a way to do good. It doesn't raise the cost of a good or service. It actually better assures that you're meeting the needs of your customers, which in the case of schooling are the parents and the children. This sort of came to me even stronger last year. I was invited into a public school in Portland by a teacher who doesn't share my beliefs at all, but I appreciated the fact that he wanted me to come in and talk to his junior class at a public high school in Portland about the benefits of the marketplace, of capitalism, of the profit motive. And after I talked about it, he weighed in himself and he said, you know, I'd rather have government making these decisions than the marketplace because I felt exploited by the Apple Corporation. I felt that their profit motive was limiting my ability to get what I wanted on my iPhone. And I looked at him and he explained, he said, up until recently, which I was not aware of, Apple restricted apps on the iPhone to Apple products. And he thought that that was exploiting him. And so I looked at the kids and I said, you know, let me ask you a question. How many of you own Apple products? And I didn't know what the answer would be. There were 30 kids in the class. 25 of them raised their hands. They either have an iPod, an iPad, you know, some Apple product. And I said, how many of you feel exploited by Apple? Not one of them raised their hand. And I explained that the reason for that is that when they spent their $50 on an iPod, they got what they wanted. They'd rather have the iPod than the $50. Steve Jobs, before he passed away, would rather have the $50 than an iPod sitting on the shelf. And the fact that he died with $7 billion, you know, in his estate didn't exploit anybody. He basically served a lot of us. I dare say probably most of the legislators have some Apple product. I have an Apple product. And the teacher weighed in again and said he again felt exploited by Apple. And the kids laughed. I don't know what he did to them after I left, but the profit motive is good. And so I think anything that moves us in that direction, which this one does, there are specific reasons, obviously, in this, you know, in the way the management companies work with the online charter schools. But I think we need to keep it in the broader context that the profit motive is not evil. It actually is a force for good. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Comments? All right. Well, thank you all. Appreciate your...
Just for the record, Mr. Chair, I have an Apple phone and I didn't get exploited. I don't understand a lot of it, but
I'm going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 587, and I think we have plowed through quite a bit of work on this agenda.
Excellent.
So thank you, committee, for your patience. And if there's no further work ahead of us today, Let me announce that we're going to carry over these bills, Senate Bill 508, 2184, and 587. And with that, we will adjourn.